Doogie.
Sam.
The Premier League Player of the Season race is wide open. Usually there's two or three viable candidates, but this year feels like it could be six or seven. It's ripe for a ranking, so let's have a crack at it. And at the end, discuss some European League candidates too.
I think he's had a fantastic season. I'd love to see him obviously take the award, you know, and it says a lot about what's going on at this club and how the team's playing as well as how well Bruno's playing.
I just don't think you can give it to a guy on a team that changed manager mid-season and weren't that good.
The most important Arsenal player is Declan Rice.
Declan Rice, being one of the best players in the league this season, epitomises everything that is wrong with football right now.
I don't think I could give it to Haaland. Doesn't matter that he's the top scorer. I do think that it's about more than that.
Igor Thiago has already scored more goals in the single Premier League season than any Brazilian player in history.
Gabriel's going to win Player of the Season.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of The Truth. I am your host, Sam Tai. Joining me is Doogie Critchley. Hello.
Hello, Sam. Great to be back. I'm looking forward to this one, actually. I feel like this is a good topic. I do say that myself because I did suggest it, but I think it's a contentious one this year. I think people could get a little bit enraged, maybe.
Enraged is what we're going for.
No, we're not rage baiting. But what I mean is I think some people will have vastly different opinions and they're all acceptable.
I think it's very fair. I think it's a nice open field. And I think there are, as I said in the intro, probably five, six, seven candidates here for Premier League Player of the Season that are all very fair shouts. And as someone who has lived through Mohamed Salah versus Kevin De Bruyne year on year.
Great era, though.
Oh, great. But like, and actually, none of the candidates this year are anywhere near as strong as, say, for example, Salah versus De Bruyne, who both deserved the award, let's be frank. It's a much wider spread, fine, but it's probably a better conversation because when football boils down to this or that, that's where it can get really pernickety and it can get really actually a bit toxic at times and quite tribalistic. Whereas this, I think a lot of neutrals here can take a look at a lot of different candidates and go, yeah, I quite fancy that one. So let's have a look, shall we? Before we do, I've got some interesting news for you, Doogie.
Oh, yeah.
And by the time this podcast drops, the listeners will know either way as well. With any luck, I'm going to Norway this weekend.
Huge.
Yeah. If Bodo Glimt see off Sporting in the next 2 hours as we sit here and record, so they make it to the Champions League quarterfinals, I'm heading over there for ESPN to do some reporting and to watch the Norwegian Cup quarterfinal against Lillestrøm.
Unreal. That'll be unbelievable. I know. So you're going up to the Arctic Circle.
You're damn right I am. Ooh. Or possibly.
Have you got your coat?
I've got a big coat. Got some big boots and I've got a nice scarf.
What a time to be going over there as well.
Yeah, really cool opportunity. So hopefully it comes through. If they botch a 3-goal aggregate lead in Lisbon on Tuesday evening, then I don't think I'm going to be going because the story's kind of done. But as it stands, Bodo Glimt's progression to this point is the story of the Champions League. And I suggested to my editor that we cover it on the ground and he said yes.
So unbelievable.
Hopefully we go.
I'm confident for you as well.
Ah, yes, let's hope. So given I could be heading up to the Arctic Circle, to the north of Norway, deep into Scandinavian territory, I sure hope I don't run into our producer, a legendary colossal sea monster that stalks the northern Atlantic. The Scourge of Sailors has 8 giant tentacles and hundreds of teeth, each the size of a man. It is our very own Kraken. Jack Collins.
Hello, Sam. How you doing? I thought on today of all days, we're recording this on Tuesday. It's St. Patrick's Day. You would have at least given me the leprechaun build-up, but apparently I've grown.
Yeah, no. The size of many, many leprechauns combined. Tried to tie it into my personal movements, Jack. I tried to be clever. Missed the obvious one in the process.
I do my best anyway.
There we go. Before we tuck in to this, just off the back of last week's episode, which was Most Improved Players, I loved all of our suggestions, of course. I love all my children. But there were some really good ones from the audience as well. So some of the comments on YouTube and Spotify. So I was having a look at them. And Lewis Hall was an excellent one. And I just want to give a shout out to the person that suggested Eric Garcia.
Yeah,
he did come on my radar. But believe it or not, I'm actually contractually obliged not to give Eric Garcia any praise whatsoever. So you were never going to get that out of my mouth. I'm glad somebody else put it forward.
Yeah, Lewis Hall was a good shout. I mean, you did have the benefit of watching his masterclass against Lamine Yamal for the basically the entire game. Well, no, he wasn't at fault for the penalty either. He kept Lamine Yamal very, very quiet, which I'm sure he'll come up in this podcast as well. Very few defenders have managed to do so effectively. Mm-hmm. And with Nico O'Reilly playing a little bit more in midfield, with Luke Shaw potentially not being a guaranteed starter for England anymore, I think Lewis Hall has a very decent chance of being the starting left-back for England at the World Cup, so it's exciting times.
A couple of months ago, if you'd have asked me, I'd have said that Tina Livramento is the favourite to play left-back, basically, on the wrong side, but we've seen it for England. He's had another injury. Lewis Hall has been spectacular, and now it's his clubmate who's maybe stolen the march on him. We'll have to see. Interesting stuff. Right, Premier League Player of the Season.
Yes.
Top five candidates, please. Doogie, you're going to lead this ranking. I have my own top five. I'll be checking it as we go to see if yours is correct. Probably not.
But yeah, probably not.
Stranger things have happened. Please start at number five and tell me who you've got.
Yeah, so this is, it's going to be interesting. I think we'll probably have similar names in and about it, but the exact ranking might be different. But one thing I wanted to make a little bit clear before we started was I don't personally subscribe to the idea that you have to be from the side that wins the Premier League to win Player of the Year.
Is that a hint?
Maybe. So in the last 3 years, it has gone like that. So Salah won it, then Foden and Haaland the year before that. And it's only happened four times in the last 10 years that it's gone to a non-winner of the Premier League. But Salah won it in 21-22 when Man City won the league. De Bruyne did it in Liverpool's 19-20 season, which must have annoyed a lot of Liverpool fans at the time, given the fact they'd waited so long. Well, it was their first ever Premier League title. 18-19, Van Dijk did it when Man City won every domestic trophy. And then in 17-18, in that Centurion season, Mo Salah won it in his first year in England, where he was absolutely phenomenal. So you don't necessarily have to win the Premier League to win Player of the Year. Maybe that's a hint, maybe not. But let's start at number five. Now, this is a player that I considered maybe not putting in at all. I thought about Bruno Guimaraes as well, but I think maybe his recent injury run has maybe scuppered that chance. But at five, I had Igor Thiago of Brentford.
Okay.
I couldn't have him any higher just because I think the candidates above him are even more deserving. But what a season from him. I mean, 19 goals and one assist in 30 games after missing the entirety of last year with injury. We did mention him briefly last week in our most improved episode. It didn't quite work out because he wasn't available for last year, so he didn't really improve on last year.
Well, he did.
He did, just by the fact he could play football. But only Erling Haaland has scored more goals than him. João Pedro is next on 14. So actually, Haaland and Igor Thiago have been in a scoring realm of themselves this year, and he's had big game impact as well. He scored braces against Man United, Newcastle, and then in some smaller games as well, Burnley and Sunderland. He also scored a hat-trick against Everton. He's already set the record for the most goals by a Brazilian in a Premier League season. Pretty remarkable in mid-March. And he's directly been involved in 43% of Brentford's goals. Brentford, despite dropping points against Wolves last night, hugely frustrating after being two goals up in that one, they're seventh. They're only 4 points off Liverpool. They've been one of the stories of the season, I think. I think Igor Thiago has been one of the stories of the season too, and I had him at five.
Okay, I like that. It's a good start. Nice start. Igor Thiago is three goals off Erling Haaland as we sit here and record in the Premier League goal scoring stakes. There is a realistic chance that he wins the Golden Boot this year. If you win the Golden Boot playing for Brentford, you must be in this conversation. I agree with your caution in limiting him at number five in this ranking. That is absolutely as high as I would put him right now. And that's all we can talk about right now, as it stands. There's a couple of other names that I would put into this conversation at around five, which means I have a very locked in like top four. Like these guys, these are my four proper candidates. And then just underneath, Igor Thiago is one. I'm gonna refrain from mentioning the other two just in case.
Okay.
You come to them next.
Okay.
So who's at four?
At four, I had Gabriel.
Okay. Now I think that was one of my players.
Really?
Yeah.
I think he might. I think some Arsenal fans watching this might actually argue that he should be Player of the Year. I think he's probably been Arsenal's most consistent player. Maybe Declan Rice has had more exceptional moments, particularly in the first half of the season, the first two thirds of the season. But I'll get onto my reasoning for Declan Rice a little bit later because I do have him slightly higher. But despite Arsenal's reputation this season, they've actually scored the most goals in the league. They have played one more game than Man City. They've only scored one more goal than Man City. So maybe they won't finish with the best attack. But really the big difference has been their defence, both in the actual goals conceded and in the underlying numbers as well. Only Milan with 21 have conceded fewer goals than Arsenal's 22 in Europe's top five leagues this season. That's six fewer than Man City. And in recent weeks where Man City have conceded some sloppy goals, despite dominating games and generally playing, I think, to a fairly decent level, their defence has kind of come undone at key moments as well. Gabriel has been a key component. I think he's now superseded Saliba as the outstanding centre-back at Arsenal. I think that's probably been the case for the last 18 months or so. That's not even a dig at Saliba. I just think Gabriel's gone to a kind of new level. He's contributed 3 goals and 4 assists as well. Now, obviously, that's not a key part of any centre-back's role, but you look into the moments and the points that he's now delivered through his attacking contribution, and he does get right up there in terms of player of the year chat, I think. So he scored a 96th minute winner versus Newcastle at the end of September. That felt like a big moment.
That was a huge moment. That was a big boy win.
Yeah. They've had a terrible record there in recent seasons as well. That was a huge moment. He got an assist versus Fulham in a 1-0 win as well, in a tricky game where they weren't playing particularly well. He got the first goal against Aston Villa. It finished 4-1. Aston Villa were they didn't perform anywhere near their top level in that game, but that was still a big goal as well. He also got the equalising goal in a 3-2 win against Bournemouth. That felt absolutely massive. And he got an assist in a 2-1 win against Chelsea as well. He leads Arsenal for blocks. He leads them for clearances, 47 more than Saliba. He's won 19 more aerial duels than Saliba. He's contributed to both ends of the pitch. I think he's Arsenal's defensive leader and linchpin. I think he's been amazing.
Yeah, I think he's been amazing too. He also symbolises in many ways both of the characteristics that define Arsenal. Which is the mean defence. He's the meanest defender on the meanest defence. Mm-hmm. And he's also the biggest set-piece threat in the league. Much of what Arsenal do in terms of set-play designs is built around getting him free. And he's got 4 assists from corners, which means he's nodding the ball back across and probably holding off a couple of players in the process. And those balls are falling to one's gone to Saliba that I can remember. One's, I think, has gone to Trossard.
Timber as well, I think.
Timber's got a couple, actually. Timber's, like, XG from set pieces is the highest in the league. Wow. Because he scored like 2 from half a yard. Yeah. That's because Gabriel's clawed his way over 3 people to nod it back across to him, which is great. Just on the Arsenal defensive stuff, they've conceded 6 fewer goals than anybody else, which is the best record. But that doesn't necessarily do it justice. In terms of non-penalty expected goals against, taking penalties out of it, Arsenal's XGA is 21.85. Next is Liverpool on 32.04. I mean, this is an astronomical difference. If Arsenal had actually kept up that the defensive effort that they started with those first 3 months, because there has been a bit of a dip and a couple of errors have crept in, a bit of inconsistency maybe. If they kept it up as they started, I mean, goodness knows where they'd have ended up. Also, to put it in perspective, this is already not as good as Chelsea's historic John Terry, Ricardo Carvalho campaign. I'm starting to think that will never be beaten. But Gabriel is a fine shout. But I had him in the honorable conversation for fifth, okay, and no higher.
I'm intrigued. Are you keeping those up your sleeve for now?
I'm going to keep them up my sleeve. I'm not actually wearing any sleeves.
Yeah, you've gone sleeveless.
I'm sleeveless.
Spring vibes in the football media.
I've gone green for some paddies.
Ah, good spot.
Yeah,
good spot.
There you go.
I like that. Okay, well, I'll go into my top three then, and I'm intrigued to hear where Sam has actually correctly got them as the rank god.
Yeah, sorry, but it means that one of my 4 locks isn't even in your conversation.
Yeah.
I hate that.
I'm intrigued.
Tell me which one that is now.
Well, we will see, because in at three... And again, this feels a bit harsh, but I've got Erling Haaland.
Okay.
And I do think we've got to take into account that it's the 17th of March. And whether you try and avoid it or not, recency bias will come into your thinking.
It will.
And it will come into the thinking of the players that are voting for this award as well. And it often does. You've got to finish the season well. It's the key moments. We've seen it in Ballon d'Or shouts. We've seen it in Player of the Years in every league as well. If you go missing at big moments, and I'm not saying Haaland has necessarily gone missing, but he's certainly not been at his best in recent weeks. He scored 4 goals in his last 18 games in all competitions. I say going into that game against Real Madrid, where they are 3-0 down.
Isn't he on like a 5-game goal drought going into that game?
It's not been good at all. He failed to even have a shot against Real Madrid last week. Just the second time he's done that in the Champions League in a single game, and the first time he's ever done that for Man City. But he still scored 29 in 41 in all competitions. He still scored 22 in 29 in the Premier League. And you look at how he started the season in particular, he scored 17 goals in his first 14 games for Man City this season in all competitions. Unfortunately, though, as I say, Man City have, even if it's felt closer, than it perhaps has felt throughout the entire season, if that makes sense. And when you watch both these sides, because Arsenal have dropped a few silly points recently as well, the gap up until the last few weeks hasn't really expanded too far. But Man City have failed to win 7 of their last 12 league games. They've drawn against Sunderland, Chelsea, Brighton, Spurs, Forest and West Ham, and lost to Man United. And in that run, Haaland has played 11 of those 12 games and he scored 3 goals.
So far, you've done a really good job of telling me why Erling Haaland should not be player of the year.
But then I find it impossible not to have him in the top five, given the amount of goals he scored and given the lack of contribution from other Man City attackers. I don't have this down as a pure failing on Haaland's part. I think Pep hasn't turned necessarily to Ryan Cherki enough in key moments, I think. I think Phil Foden's had a disappointing year. I think Savio's had a really disappointing year up until recently. Bob didn't get a look in before going off in January to Fulham. Antoine Semenyo arrived in January. There's been some debate about whether he adds enough to the side, except for goals, really. Jeremy Doku's had injury issues and shone on occasion. It just feels like so many Man City attackers, even Marmoush, up until probably January time, very little impact at all this season. So I still think Haaland deserves respect for, in my opinion, most likely finishing with the Golden Boot by probably quite a bit of distance, but I couldn't have him higher.
Yeah, okay, understand that. And this is the eternal struggle with these kinds of debates, because we can get in amongst the weeds of these players and we can look at all of the advanced stats and we can consider everything. But sometimes you're at risk of galaxy braining it. And the reality is that football is about scoring goals, which win games. Scoring goals is the hardest part of football, and Erling Haaland scores more than anyone else. And he's on 29 goals and assists in the Premier League alone for the season, which is far and away the best tally. And you look back at some of the goals he scored this season, he has bullied defenders. The one against Brentford, where he just bodied two players and slotted home, was amazing. And the finish in the mental game at Craven Cottage, across his body in the rain. I mean, he's actually done about 3 of those this season across the body with beautiful stuff. He's also scored some magnificent headers, which is an art that I really appreciate. So a lot of what Haaland has done this season is very impressive, and he deserves to be in the top five. I have him at 4th.
Okay.
So Gabriel and Igor Thiago were my contestants for 5th, and I feel confident now that you are not going to say the name Antoine Semenyo.
No.
He was my other candidate for 5th.
Okay.
I do not underestimate, first of all, how good he was for Bournemouth in the first half of the season. 13 goals and assists for a middling team. And do not underestimate how hard it is to move from a very small pond to a huge pond. We're talking like 11,000 seats at Bournemouth in the Vitality to one of the world's best teams, and just don't miss a beat. Mm-hmm. And he's scored 7 more goals since. He's been excellent in the cups. I think he deserves a lot of credit. I don't think he's player of the season, but he was on my periphery. So that was Semenyo, Gabriel, Igor Thiago in at roughly 5. Haaland was my 4th. I think I know who you've missed out of my top 3.
Okay.
But I'm not going to say.
Okay,
No, please carry on.
The suspense is killing me. Gosh, I feel like I'm about to be corrected by the ultimate teacher. Okay, in at 2. Okay, this is kind of reveals probably the 1 as well. Mm-hmm. But in at 2, he's one of my favourite players in the entire Premier League. I think he's had an amazing impact on a side that I think are likely to win the league. I've gone with Declan Rice.
This is where Rice lands. Okay.
Yeah, this was the thinking for me. Look, he's had, I think, a brilliant season, and the balance that him and Zubimendi have provided in the middle of the park in a season where so few of Arsenal's attackers have got anywhere near to their top level, I think he's been absolutely vital to them. Has he had as many special Declan Rice moments? And we know what those are. And I'm not just talking about those amazing free kicks against Real Madrid, but those driving runs, those sort of eye-catching through balls or moments of just insane speed and agility on transition. Probably not. But I think he's provided a serious amount of balance and work rate in this side. But I do think he's slightly dipped in the last month or so. And then also, you cannot talk about this Arsenal side and this potential title without mentioning his delivery, mm-hmm. which is absolutely world class. Absolutely world class. People might debate whether Declan Rice as a whole is world class. If your version of world class is top 3 midfielders in the world, and everyone will have different ideas. Personally, I'd have him very close to that, if not world class. But his delivery certainly is. Both Bukayo Saka with his left foot, Declan Rice with his right. Absolutely massive. And he has provided in big moments as well. There was an assist versus Newcastle in that win, as I already mentioned. 2 big goals in that Bournemouth win around the turn of the year, where it felt like There was a little bit of doubt creeping in at Arsenal. That was a big, big moment as well. But he hasn't scored in his last 11 games. As I say, it's not all about goals and assists this year. I think because around the entire pitch, his impact has been really, really right up there. And I think Zubimendi, I probably should have had an honourable mention in this as well. I also have been really impressed by the quality of some of the goals that Zubimendi scored as well.
Yeah, got a spring on him, hasn't he?
He really does. I think he's really pleasantly surprised me by how impactful he's been in the final third. But I think Declan Rice of the two of them probably deserves the top five more.
So Rice is my number one.
Is he?
Yeah, he is my pick as it stands. And in a couple of weeks, I think I'll be...
Yeah, you cast a vote.
I'll be voted. Well, I've cast a vote for the FWA, Football Writers. It's not the real one.
Often they do differ, though, as in who ends up winning it.
Well, do you want my conspiracy theory on that?
Oh, I mean, conspiracy.
I would say that much of the media, particularly in years that is going into a World Cup or a Euros, if there is an opportunity to do so, much of the media will vote for an English person.
Really?
Because it will butter them up nicely and they'll get good access over the summer. That's what I believe. Oh. That's why I think Jamie Vardy won it going into the Euro 2016 when obviously he was amazing, but I voted for Kante.
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought Mahrez.
Well, Mahrez won PFA, I think. Yeah.
He won PFA, correct. So that's my theory. It doesn't always work, but there is a correlation between English players doing surprisingly well every 2 years.
Okay.
So is what it is.
Journalists' access to England is so good at the moment that, well, I don't know.
Maybe it's changed now, but 10 years ago it was a dark place, so it was quite hard to get the players on side.
Yeah.
Remember how bad Euro 2016 was, but let's not go into that. I think Rice will win the FWA award this year. He's just won the London Player of the Year. And I think he could possibly win this one too, the big one. You've said a lot. You've covered a lot there. I'll just say that is the most assists, the most big chances created, the most ball recoveries, and the second highest distance run of any Arsenal player. So a really nice span of qualities. Second to Zubimendi in distance covered, by the way, who's been phenomenal.
Mm.
For me, Rice is... He's emblematic of the Premier League meta, like what we're watching every week, the style of the league. He encapsulates the style of the league. He's also, I think, emblematic of Arsenal's general approach, which is team-oriented, it's physical, it's hard-working, and it sort of lacks in stardust a bit because, you know, the main creative forces like Saka and Odegaard have not had their best season. So in that void, Declan Rice has risen to the fore. He has provided some moments for sure because the delivery is so sweet. But if Arsenal win this title, it would be through sheer grind. And no one has ground harder than Declan Rice. No one.
He's been brilliant.
So for me, it makes perfect sense for him to be crowned Player of the Year if Arsenal were to go ahead and do this.
Okay, I like it. Well, I mean, you'd have guessed by now that my first pick to win Player of the Year this year...
Morgan Rogers.
...is Dan Ballard. No, it is Bruno Fernandes. Yeah. As I mentioned, recency bias, it will be a factor in my decision. I don't think Declan Rice has played as well as Bruno Fernandes for the last 6 weeks or so. Bruno Fernandes has probably been one of the outstanding players in the world since Michael Carrick took over. Michael Carrick and Bruno Fernandes had the advantage of Bruno returning to his natural position. The mood, obviously, at Man United.
He could have done it at any time.
Well, exactly. But the mood around Man United instantly lifting. You know, Carrick's won, what, 7 of 9 games since taking over. Bruno Fernandes in that run, 2 goals and 8 assists. He's now on 7 goals and 16 assists in 27 league games, which is pretty remarkable given the fact he's playing central midfield up until mid-January.
Deep central midfield
deep
at points
central
as
midfield,
well.
Yeah. Exactly.
Taking the ball off Luke Shaw's toes.
Yeah, he's created the most chances in the entirety of Europe. He ranks 5th for shots in the entire Premier League as well. And he's got 8 games left to get 5 assists and break the Premier League assist record. And actually, Monday Night Football were covering it a bit last night and showing how many are from set pieces or not. To me, it doesn't really matter in the same way that we can credit Declan Rice for dictating so much the mood of this season. You know, Bruno Fernandes being very good off a dead ball is you know, a crucial component.
It's perfectly legitimate.
Perfectly legitimate. And also, you look at, as you mentioned, you know, Odegaard, Saka, Palmer, Wirtz struggling this season, De Bruyne leaving the league. Having someone that plays as off the cuff, as entertaining in style as Bruno Fernandes has been such a relief to see, I think, particularly in the last 7 weeks or so since Carrick took over. So I think it's probably between Bruno Fernandes and Declan Rice. I actually can't really imagine a Haaland winning it right now. I can't really imagine a Gabriel winning it necessarily in terms of player vote. Mm. So I think it will be between those two. I think a lot will be swayed by Declan Rice. And look, I'm not angry if Declan Rice wins it. I'm not going to be frustrated. I'm not going to send out some angry tweet. But I just think Bruno Fernandes, at the moment, in an unremarkable season for individuals across the league, I've really enjoyed watching him.
Yeah, I think that sums it up nicely. A brilliant individual campaign in amongst a shower, really, for about at least half the season. Last nine games, better from the team, and Bruno has only got better as a result of that. But he was still very, very good in those opening sort of 20 weeks of the season under Amorim anyway. A couple of stats to throw at you. Most big chances created, 24. The next is Cherki on 15.
Wow.
By the way, Cherki, fair play, because he's done that in about 60% of the minutes that Bruno has played.
When he plays.
So when he plays, he is an absolute big chance machine.
Release him, Pep.
Yeah, and Bruno, highest expected assist total as well. So it tracks that expected assist and assist, they go hand in hand there. If he breaks this assist record, it's a big deal.
Mm.
He's on 16, he needs to get to 21. If he gets to 20, he draws level with Kevin De Bruyne and Thierry Henry.
Not bad company.
Now, it took De Bruyne basically his whole life to get to level pegging with Thierry Henry. And there were a couple of seasons where De Bruyne was on like 15, 16 by like February. And we were like, it's going to happen. And it never happened. He just completely sloped off on the assists in the last couple of months. And Thierry Henry's record stood for absolutely ages and still hasn't been beaten. So while it kind of looks like a very achievable and beatable record, 21... it's not. Like, it's a huge amount of assists. So if he breaks it, fair play. Like, it will be a tremendous achievement. This is not like scoring 30 goals or 31 goals. I think this is so much bigger and so much harder to do. So I will have nothing but respect for the man. I don't really like him as a player in terms of the way he behaves and acts a lot of the time. But my God, is he good.
Yeah, he's been amazing. I think the advantage that he's got versus Henri and De Bruyne in terms of going further is that, what, there's 6 weeks until the end of the season. Man United have got, what, 8 games in 6 weeks. De Bruyne was competing on multiple fronts in all those years.
Yeah.
You know, Arsenal would never go as deep in the Champions League as Man City traditionally, but still Henri was playing probably deep in every competition. You know, Man United have had 40 games. That is an advantage in many ways. I hope he breaks it. Purely because I quite enjoy new history being set. You know, I really enjoyed Max Diamond at the weekend becoming the youngest ever Premier League goalscorer as well. So records are there to be broken. It'll be fun.
No, indeed. So would you like to hear who you've missed out?
Yes.
Yeah. Jack, just as you've been listening, any chance that you've figured out who I've got on my list here? At number two,
wow,
above Bruno, that hasn't been said by Doogie.
Well, I kind of just assume you're going to say Morgan Rogers.
No. I might be silly, but I'm not that silly.
João Pedro.
No.
Okay. No, I don't know.
This man could not have done any more individually this season.
David Raya.
Dominic Szoboszlai.
Yeah.
Oh, my days. Like, I feel sorry for him at this point. He has had the most tremendous individual season with so many moments, and the team around him just haven't lived up to it at all. But what a sensational highlight reel Dominic Szoboszlai will take from this campaign. He is now up to 4 direct free kick goals this season, which is the most from a Liverpool player ever.
Vicario did help him out a little bit.
Yeah, Vicario gets the assist from that. But two of them, so the one against Arsenal early in the season was insane. The one against City basically was like Roberto Carlos 2026. Yeah. It like bent physics, right? He has been a star player in attacking midfield, off the flank, central midfield, and at right back, a position I bet he has never played in his life before this season. But he was better at right back than most career professionals are, and just drops in and out of that position like it's absolutely nothing. I was absolutely astonished by how good he was there. And I started feeling sorry for him at the weekend because of his comments after the Spurs draw. Did you see what he said?
I didn't see them, though.
I'll read his comments. He said, "It's a huge disappointment. I don't know what happened." That's referring to the late goal. "I have nothing to say. In the last minute, again, I don't know how many times this season already, we have to wake up. I feel flat. We have to wake up because if we carry on like this, we should be happy with the Conference League. I don't know why this is happening. I honestly don't know." He is crestfallen at basically almost everybody else around him just not living up to his standards.
Probably should have tracked his man then, shouldn't he?
Oh, there you go. He's just been brilliant. And he like on an individual basis, and this is what this award is for is. Zobozai for me has been right in this conversation.
So you have him above Bruno.
I've got him above Bruno. Yeah, Haaland. I think longevity. I think Zobozai has been great from minute one, basically, just absolutely superb. Bruno was very good, and then the recency bias is starting to creep in there. So, but I've got him at three. So I've got Rice top, Zobozai second, Bruno Fernandes third, Erling Haaland in fourth, and then fifth, an open task for Semenyo or Gabriel or Igor Thiago.
Fair enough. I think that's a very good shout.
Jack, anything to add? Any players? No Fulham players.
No, I don't have anyone to add. Like, I think you've very much covered.
I mean, we've covered like eight players.
Yeah. Like, but I would have them in a different order. And also, I think that what's interesting here is, I think if Bruno Fernandes breaks the assist record, he should win it. Like, if Igor Thiago wins the Golden Boot, he should win it.
Yeah.
But actually, if I was going to give it to an Arsenal player, I think I'm with Doogie. I think I would give it to Bruno, like right now as we stand. But if I was going to give it to an Arsenal player, I would have given it to Gabriel. Mm. Like that was the way that I would look at it for all the reasons you outlined. But I think that if we're talking about a season that has been built on physicality and defensive solidity, this is, you know, very much a more than the sum of its parts Arsenal team. I think Gabriel is the emblem of that. Like, I really do. In the way that you feel about Rice, Sam, I feel that way about Gabriel. I feel like he is the player that stands out to me as the one who sums up what this Arsenal team is about. I think that if Arsenal win this and they want to give it to an Arsenal player, he's the one I would plump for.
All right, there you go. Good. We're all in the same ballpark.
Yes.
Which is always a good start, but a slightly different order, which is natural. It's exactly how it should be. Good stuff. Premier League tick. Should we just scoot across Europe very briefly and just take a look at the other leagues? Where do you want to start? Italy?
Should we start with Italy? Yeah, Italy. I mean, there's a few of these that I think are very straightforward. There's a few where it's a little bit more contentious. Italy, very straightforward.
I think it has to be Federico Di Marco.
I agree.
I just can't see any other way you can give it to anybody else. He's having an all-time creative season. 76 chances created and the highest expected assist tally in Serie A. I checked in with a few friends and a few colleagues that cover this league more closely than I do, and I asked, and they were like, the answer was automatic. The only other player that could potentially hold a candle here, and this is just purely from like an emotional and fun perspective, is Nico Paz. Like, you could make that argument.
I thought you might say Kenan Yildiz, but
Yeah, actually, to be fair, that's also a good shout. But it's Di Marco, isn't it?
Yeah, it is Di Marco. And we've mentioned it a bit throughout this kind of season as well. But whether we thought he was a poor player after last year's Champions League or not, he was still kind of embarrassed on the biggest stage.
Scapegoated, wasn't he?
Yeah, on the stage. Like, he got embarrassed by Lamine Yamal. He had a really poor final as well. And to respond in this manner, so, so impressive. And in to have, despite a kind of recent slight wobble with dropping points, well, losing the Derby della Madonnina, and then they drew it the weekend against Atalanta as well. It feels like they will secure the title. Yep. It's definitely not... Well, Lautaro's been solid, but definitely not at his absolute best. I think Barella's been well off his usual level. Marcus Thuram, too. Aside from that, you know, Calhanoglu maybe, but no,
he's been injured
DiMarco.
A bit as well.
Yeah,
like, it's been DiMarco. Yeah, the lack of goal scorers, like that top goal scorer list in Serie A, the home of goals, according to 90s people, it's quite depressing.
Well, our old mate Keenan Davis is up there, yeah.
Good old Keenan. I'd give it to Keenan. Give it to Keenan at the end of the season. Right, where next?
Should we go to Spain? Because I think this is actually a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
In that, throughout this entire season, I've kind of been running this narrative pretty much just by me.
Doogie's running narratives. No one has ever admitted to that, by the way.
Yeah. No, I've been peddling it that Kylian Mbappe is having a really underrated season.
Mm-hmm.
But even I thought about it and sat down today and thought, it's got to be Lamine Yamal. Because in this run where it looks like Barcelona have not secured the title, there'll be, I think, more twists, and I don't think there'll be many points in it by the end. But Barcelona have won 14 of their last 16 games. Yamal has scored 12 and assisted 5 in that run. He's put them 4 points clear with 10 games to go. Massive hat-trick against Villarreal a couple of weeks ago. Big goal against Athletic Club. These are big moments.
Some of the goals that he has scored this season have taken my breath away. Like, he's doing remarkable things, like beyond anything I think I can see from anyone else across world football right now, it's funny, isn't it? You get so used to these players so quickly that it really does take something like Yamal cutting in and bullet into the top corner for you to go, oh yeah, like he's capable of that, because you see them so much, there's so much football and you get to know them so quickly, so early. But he still astounds me right now, and that's fantastic. I don't know if I'd give it to him over Mbappe though. I do think it is a proper two horse race between them. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me while I was thinking about this that everything we've just talked about with the Premier League, it's lacking that attacking stardust. It's all in La Liga.
Yeah, yeah.
The real stars are here at Barcelona and Real Madrid, and they are competing. Yeah, I'll just watch La Liga from now on.
Yeah, I mean, I've been interested. Get your thoughts in the comments and get at us on Twitter about who you'd have between them. I thought just, again, I can't help but be shaped by what I've seen recently as well. I think Yamal's had an exceptional last 6 weeks. Mbappe's had injury issues. He is supposedly in the squad for that Man City game as well, but he'll probably be half fit and they're already... I don't want to say they're already through necessarily, but they've got a very decent chance of going through
as well. This is one of the biggest betrayals in this podcast history, by the way.
I know.
For the last like 4 months, you've been telling us like Mbappe's having an underrated season, Mbappe's underrated, he's Real Madrid's best player, we need to do an episode on Mbappe. And now when it comes to it, you've tried to give the award to somebody else.
Yeah, I know. Awful. I just feel like, given the fact that he was playing through an injury, apparently is still playing through an injury, Lamine Yamal and Mbappe, to be fair.
They're all injured, mate. Everyone's injured.
But Rafinha's not been at his best this season. He's had injury issues. Rashford's obviously been new to the club, been kind of in and out the side. Ferran Torres has been starting.
Pedri has started 15 league games.
There we have it.
It's not many.
Lamine Yamal, without him, I think it'd be a very different story. So I think he's been absolutely brilliant. But yeah, that's a very tight one, I think.
It is indeed. All right, an easy one for me in Germany. Mm. Might not be easy for others. I think the Ballon d'Or chat I saw last week was a bit much, but I do think Michael Olise is having some season.
Was that you?
That was me.
There were one or two people.
I don't think it's crazy.
I think it might be a bit much, but hang on, because the Ballon d'Or is often shaped by the quarterfinals onwards. So let's see how the season plays out. Maybe Jack's going early on another Ballon d'Or candidate. Wouldn't be like him. No, sir. But Olise, with 10 goals and 17 assists in the league, that benefits from playing with unbelievable footballers, part of the best league's best attack, but I struggle to look beyond him, even with Harry Kane's numbers.
Interesting. I think Michael Olise is Bayern's best player. I think he's been Bayern's best player since he arrived, but on the basis of who has had the more special season, okay, I'm marginally giving it to Harry Kane.
Okay.
Marginally, but... You know, he's got a little bit of a way to go now. He needs to score 12 in the remaining 8 to break Lewandowski's record.
Like, that's fine.
I know, but he's had a calf issue. There has been, well, Nico Jackson's now suspended for the next league game. But you imagine, you know, Bayern have a really decent chance at the Champions League as well, whether his minutes will be slightly managed in that as well. But I marginally gave it. I also think Luis Diaz has had an exceptional season as well. So it's between the three of them. I think Olise and Kane are in a world of their own, but I think I marginally gave it to Kane.
Okay, cool. And then I think that leaves us with, to me, the most difficult one, which is France.
Yeah.
It's most difficult for two reasons. One, I don't watch much Liga, so I can't really say. It's not on my TV anymore. And second of all, but given that basically every single PSG player has been interrupted by injury so far this season, there is no obvious PSG player to point to.
Yeah.
So in lieu of that, who are you looking at?
Well, there's an obvious candidate that plays on the south coast of France, but I don't really want to talk about him whatsoever. So I think the narrative, the most interesting sort of storyline this season has been Lens in Ligue 1. And look, they don't have star names to the same extent, obviously, as PSG. PSG are the reigning treble winners. PSG, however far they get in the Champions League, have been disappointing domestically, I would say. And as you point out, a lot of that is injury related. As we've said all season, it's very difficult to play back-to-back entire seasons. I think Florian Thauvin's got a shout at Lens.
He's my pick.
Yeah.
It's vibes, but it's my pick.
And then Adrien Thomasson as well, the central midfielder as well. 2 goals and 7 assists, most chances created in France. I don't want to watch Lens on a week-to-week basis, but I would marginally give it to Thauvin. I think it's probably been one of the funnest stories, watching him come back to France and after years at Udinese, and has probably got a decent chance of making the World Cup squad as well, because you look at some of France's attacking players that you would have assumed would be a surefire bet maybe 12 months ago, like a Marcus Thuram or someone like that. I don't know whether he's going to get picked. So Thauvin to the World Cup.
Yeah, okay. Jack, would you like to come in and start talking about Joaquin Panicelli, or are we done here?
No, I think that ship might have sailed. I do think Mamadou Sangare has been excellent for Lens, and I think that he should probably be in the conversation with the amount that he's been able to put up. Just a couple of like outside shouts that I wanted to include. I think Felix Nmecha has had an absolute absolutely outrageous season with Borussia Dortmund establishing himself as like a genuine box-to-box number eight threat and has really kind of stepped up this season. And the only one in Spain, he's not going to win it over the other two, but I think he should just be being talked about. Alberto Moledo came in to Villarreal to replace Alex Baena, who had been the most creative player in La Liga last season. And he has been absolutely outstanding for Villarreal. Him and Mikel Tadza, who have both had really, really good campaigns. But I think the kind of pressure on Moledo to walk in there, to take Baena's shirt and to step up as the creative threat for this Villarreal side. And I know they absolutely bombed out the Champions League, but they've been really good for the most part domestically. And I think Moledo has stepped into that breach with absolute fluidity. Really, really exciting young player. Came from Las Palmas. I think he cost like a third of what they sold Baena for to Atletico Madrid and just has taken to it like a duck to water. So I just wanted to put his name in the mix as well.
Love that show.
Very fair indeed. Right, that's the top five leagues covered. Superb. We are closing this podcast currently. Bodo Glimt are drawing 0-0 with Sporting 22 minutes in. Pray for me, people. Pray for me. I want to get on that flight to the Arctic Circle. I'm on holiday next week. Nothing to do with Norway. It might be to do with Norway. I need a bit of
a
rest.
Are you going to go direct?
Am I going? Oh, you can't fly direct to Bodo?
No, but are you going from Bodo to your holiday?
Oh, no. So my holiday is basically my childminder is going on holiday. So I have to take care of my kid.
Yeah.
I have to book holiday now.
Fatherhood.
Do not become an adult. It sucks. Bodo, though, you have to fly to Oslo and then get a connector.
Okay.
So it's going to take me like 6 hours.
So worth it.
Should be good fun. Well, hopefully. Let's hope they hold out. But there'll be no podcast next week. We're going to take a breather. So I guess where I would usually say here, see you same time next week. I can't say that. See you same time in 2 weeks' time. Also, thanks, Doogie.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Sam. The real reason that you can't do a podcast next week is because I'm in Prague with the Republic of Ireland.
Not true. Doogie and I know exactly how to work these cameras and all the audio equipment, and we could do it.
No, we couldn't.
No chance. So a good
it
chance.
It actually works actually quite well anyway, because it's my 32nd on Tuesday.
Goodness me. We've all got stuff on.
Yeah.
What a life indeed.
Adult stuff.
All right. A timely break for us all then, but then we will see you same time the following week.
2 weeks' time.